30 to 35 years ago, the Prince Road congregation, who at that time was meeting at Marguerite and Elliott, scheduled a meeting with Richard Riggins in one of the weekend meeting, and one of the subjects that we asked him to talk about was church membership. And I took notes that night, a little 3x5 card on pencil, and I carried that for years. And sometime in the last 2 years, I threw that away. Seems like about a year after I threw it away, the phone rings, and it's Tom Dennis. Dave, we'd like you to talk on church membership. And unlike Tad, I was here 30 years ago. And today's lesson deals with membership in the church. And I believe the Bible speaks of the church in two senses. And I don't want to make this too elementary, but I want us to really start on the same page. The Bible, the New Testament, speaks of the church in a universal sense, and it also speaks of the church in a local sense. And I believe it's fairly easy for a Bible student with any background to be able to look at the verse that's being talked about, look at the context, and make the discernment there what is being talked about. Let me give you a couple examples and kind of get us started. Matthew chapter 16, verse 18. And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Well, what was he talking about? I believe Jesus was talking about the church in a universal sense. He wasn't talking about a certain location that a congregation was going to be built, but he was talking about everything. We skip over two chapters and we see the comment that Jesus makes in Matthew chapter 18 and verse 17. And just so you get the context of this, the context here is about the brother has a trespass one against the other, and here are the steps to take to reconcile that difference. And the third step happens to take place in verse 17. He says, and if he shall neglect to hear them, tell them to the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. Well, it's obvious from that example that it's not talking about the church in a universal sense, but it's talking about a congregation of people that make up the church in that location. If you have a problem here at Nixon, you don't call over to Ozark and say, let's all get together and see if we can solve this problem. The problem needs to be solved at the universal level. I just bring that up to make sure that we're on the same page. I think Tad's comments this morning regarding the church, almost always we're talking about the church universal. Most of my comments today will be talking about the church local. In preparation for this lesson, I queried some individuals from various congregations, about seven or eight congregations in three or four different states, and I just asked them the question, do you have individuals that attend your congregation that are baptized believers, but they are not members of that congregation? And I didn't ask for any names, wasn't interested in that, no names were given to me, but of these eight congregations where I ask individuals, seven of the eight said, yes, we have individuals that fit that criteria. While the numbers are few, it still shows that there's differing opinions on the subject of church membership. There are reasons for not becoming a member of a local congregation. I don't say they're valid reasons, but you perhaps have had discussions with people and they don't want to be a member of a local congregation. And here are some of the reasons that have been told to me personally, and again, there's no names here, but I want to address those because there are some people that have just as strong feelings one way about it as I have the other way. One of the reasons for people not understanding what local membership is just lack of understanding what it is, lack of teaching. And sometimes you can make this problem go away just by a Bible study or two to help them understand what local membership is. It may come from their background. Maybe they come from a background where there was no membership. The other thing that exists here is that in the universal sense of religious bodies, people look at membership differently. About a year ago, I attended a wedding in a denominational church. And as we were sitting waiting for things to get started, I pulled out their little pamphlet they had there, and it told the steps that they went through if you wanted to be a member. They preferred you to be baptized, but it wasn't necessary. And it went through another step. And it finally got down to the bottom line. If you just want to be a member with us, just contact one of us and tell us you want to be a member here. And that's just how simple it was at that congregation. I read an obituary recently. And I did know the lady. I thought I might have known her, is the reason I started reading them, but it turns out that I didn't. And it listed there two congregations that she was members of. And the two congregations were about 60 miles apart, and they didn't even have the same name. They weren't even the same denomination. So we see the wide variety that exists in the religious world on what membership consists of. So lack of understanding, I think, or lack of teaching can be dealt with as we use the New Testament. We'll try to do that today. The other reason, the chief reason that people often give for not being part of the local body is they often tell me, or they have told me, well, there's no biblical authority for you to ask for membership. Now, I do admire that approach in people when they make decisions based upon what the Scripture tells them to do. I just think you have to be really careful when you use that line of reasoning, not only on this subject, but on any subject, where you say that we don't have chapter and verse. I'm not sure we have chapter and verse for a two-week meeting. Songbooks, air conditioning. I'm glad we have them all. But I think that what we're doing here is those things fall under bigger commandments that don't violate any other commandments. We're told to come together. We're told to sing. We're told to worship. So those things fall underneath those commands. And I think we do have some liberty in those areas as long as we're not violating other commands that God has given us. So my reasoning there is, if you're going to be consistent and say that there's no biblical authority, are you going to use that same line of reasoning for everything else that exists? Because we're surrounded by things that we just can't put a chapter and verse on specifically. So just think about that, if that would be your line of reasoning. I believe local membership at least falls under three broader commands. While we're not given chapter and verse on membership, I think it falls under three broader commands. 1 Corinthians 14 and 40 talks about the church doing things decently in order. Our understanding of God from what the Scriptures tell us gives us a picture of God who is a God of order. When you look at the creation, how things were created, how things exist today, the solar system, the cycle of life, the cycle of plants, animal kingdoms, the human body, they all speak to a God of order. The things that we see, the things that happen every day, are not random. They're from a God of order. So when he designed the church, do you suppose that he would design the church in any different manner than he designed everything else? I think not. I think he designed the church to be done in a decent order. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17. Obey them that have the rule over you, and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls, that they may give account, that they may do it with joy, not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. If you had to put a broad category on that verse, it's talking about the authority in the church. Ted talked about that in his talk. Other things that God created, other institutions that God created, have authority in them. Local government. He wants us to be responsible to local government. The family. The man is the head of the family. That's the authority in that particular body. So it is with the church that the elders are in the authority, and those of us should be underneath them. And then the third category that I think that falls, church membership falls in this broad category, is our consideration for others. And we'll talk about this in quite a bit more depth a little bit later on. But 1 Peter 5 and 5, just one verse there, says, be subject one to another. Hebrews 13 and 17 talks about obeying and submitting to the elders of the congregation. But we all have a responsibility to one another. And I think to be responsible for one another, we have to let one another know where we stand. Now, the third example is that people verbally don't give me this answer, but I have a perception that this is the real reason that they don't want to become a member of the local body, is that they just don't want to be under authority. That's unfortunate, because God has set the authority up. It wasn't my idea. It wasn't Tom Dennis's idea. It was that this is the best way for an organization to function. This is the best way for a church to function, is that they have authority in it. So while the New Testament does not explicitly command local membership, it seems obvious to me that we have both example and inference that lead us to that conclusion. Now, there's going to be a talk. I'm not sure when Ben Morris is going to give that talk. But the title of that talk is Command, Example, and Inference. I think that's next week. And he can probably tell you in more details on that. So I believe church membership, local church membership, is not a question of Bible principle. It is a question of Bible principle, not of personal preference. Lots of people would just like to say, well, my membership's in heaven. I belong to the universal church. Well, we all do, but there's another step that takes place after that. Our judgment is pictured as to be judged individually on our own merits. But the journey to the judgment day is never pictured as an individual journey where you're just out here alone. Universally, the church is depicted and Christians are depicted as being in an organized fashion as opposed to a standalone individual. The very terms that are used in the scriptures to define the church makes us understand what the church is about. Terms like the sheepfold, the flock, the kingdom, the temple, the body, all organized units. Now, the church is never referred to, as I'm aware of, as an army, but we are referred to as soldiers, soldiers of Christ. So I make the leap there that we are an army. One army doesn't know who's with it and who's against it. A couple of indications, I believe, that indicate that the New Testament had membership. Acts chapter 6 and verse 3, "Wherefore, brethren, look ye out among ye seven men of honest report, full of Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business." Look ye out among you seven men. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 2 deals with the disfellowship of an individual when other acts of discipline hadn't got to the desired means. And the wording there is that we withdraw from that member. Well, how could you withdraw from somebody that wasn't a part of the member, part of the body to start with? I think you could also possibly cite 1 Timothy 5, deals with the support of widows. It seems to be an indication there in 1 Timothy chapter 5 that they knew which widows were in need of support. So obviously they had put them in their number. And then in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 12, Epaphras, who is one of you, is one of you. Seems to be indications to me. Now, the other thing that I've been asked to talk about is what are the reasons and what are the benefits of being a member of a local congregation? Well, number one, I believe it's the right thing to do, and that maybe that's enough. We could just stop there, but I do have other reasons. Hebrews 13 and 17 tells me that that's the right thing to do. You need to have a communication with the eldership and tell them, I want to be a member of this congregation. And hopefully you say, whatever you need me to do, I'll do it. Even if you don't say the second part, say the first part. I want to be a member of this congregation. Let the eldership know where you stand on that subject. When you do that, it shows a commitment to the elders about what you're willing to do. It shows a commitment to the other members. And it asks the other members to commit to you. It shows that you're willing to be in this fight together. The word submission means, the definition that always sticks with me is under the mission. Under the mission. Well, what is the mission of the church? Well, the mission of the church is to save souls. And the elders are over that local congregation. You're under their mission. Number two is, a benefit of being a member of a local congregation is the support and assurance that comes from the fellow members. Among other reasons, the church was created to be a support system. Now, Barry is going to talk next Sunday over at Ozark on that very subject, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. But there's examples in the Scriptures that indicate that we all need support. Story of Elijah, and of course the story of Elijah doesn't deal with the church. The church wasn't existed. But in 1 Kings chapter 19 and verse 10, Elijah is feeling a little, perhaps, down on himself, thinks he is the only one left. But we get down to verse 18, and he is reassured by God that 7,000 have not bowed to Baal. Well, what does that tell us? Why didn't God just tell him, you're right, Elijah, you're on your own. Figure it out. It's your problem. Or why did he just keep silent? Maybe leave Elijah in doubt. But rather, he refers to him, he gives him some emotional support by telling him, Elijah, you're not the only one. I'm convinced that most of us, if not all of us, would probably fail miserably if it was an individual thing. And I'm also convinced of just the opposite, that many people will have their souls saved because the church is a group that works together. We can't do it on our own, and we do much better working with others. I have an example here, and some of our California brethren are here that could speak more about this than I could. But it's the sequoia trees in Northern California, some of the hugest things that we have, 250 to 275 feet tall. But there's an odd thing about those sequoia trees, that for as large as they are, they don't have a really big root system. And we all learned in school that, you know, the strength of the tree is that tap root that goes down. They don't have that. And if a sequoia tree would get out here by itself and a strong wind would come by, it wouldn't be nearly as strong as you might think it would be. But rather what we see in the sequoia trees is that they're often in groves, and their roots, instead of going down like we might think, they go out. So you have this grove of sequoia trees that their support comes not from their great stature, but their support comes from all the intertwining roots of this grove of trees. I think it's a very good nature picture of how the church operates. Individually, standing alone, we're not so good. But we're in a group and we're all working together, and we all get our roots entangled in, we can be very strong collectively. Number three, the benefit of being a member of a local congregation comes from a Proverbs 27 and 17. Iron sharpens iron. Being part of a group provides opportunity for growth that I just don't think exists if you're by yourself. You're subject to different deliveries of the message. We were talking at lunch, the values of mutual edification. We hear speakers that just kind of speak on our level, that make the Word just kind of come alive to us. And when we're subject to the Word as a group, it just provides tremendous opportunity to grow. Number four is accountability. And this is the area that some people don't want to be a part of. They don't want to be accountable, and it's a problem in society. I hope it doesn't become a problem in the church. But when you have some time, sometime you have a concordance, look up all the references that deal with either one another, or to one another, or for one another. It's the idea that we're all accountable, and I'm just going to give you a few of them. We're supposed to edify one another. We're supposed to be like-minded to one another. Admonish one another, serve one another, forbear one another, be tender-hearted, forgiving, submitting, comforting. We're supposed to provoke one another to good works. Confess our faults to one another. We're supposed to have compassion to one another, be hospitable to one another, be subject to one another, minister to one another. You get the picture how that a congregation is supposed to work. Number five, being a member of a local congregation permits you to participate in the selections of officers. Here a while back at Prince Road, we went out for officers. It's been several years ago, and the person that was in charge of that, the first thing he asked for, give me a list of your membership. I want to talk to them. And those are the people that are going to be selecting officers. Everyone has a voice in that. If you're not a member of that, you wouldn't get to participate in that process. And then last reason that I'll mention on this in this area is the idea of synergy. I even cringe to use this word, but what it means in the corporate world is you have two companies that are going to combine, and they say it's synergy. What that says to people at my level is there's going to be layoffs. What synergy means is that it's the interaction or cooperation of individual or organization that produced a combined effect greater than the sum of its separate parts. Now, having said that, I'm going to give you the Southern Missouri definition. And I say that with great respect because I was born in southern Missouri. My grandparents came from southern Missouri. But this is probably says the idea better than I could put into words. And you'd have to, the younger generation won't get it, but maybe you can ask your grandparents. It has to deal with workhorses. If you have a workhorse here that can pull 2,000 pounds, and you have another horse over here that is of equal strength, and he can pull 2,000 pounds, your math would tell you that when you hook those two horses together, they ought to be able to pull 4,000 pounds. But in reality, they can probably pull 6,000 pounds because they can pull more combined than they can individually. And that's what synergy is about. And that's what the congregation or a church is about, is that if everybody's off doing their thing individually, some work might get done. But when the church does things collectively, more work can get done than could be individually. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and 27, because people that are doubters on this subject might take everything I've said so far and said, well, I can have all those benefits. I can reap all those benefits without being a part of the body, and I'll be just fine. But it's hard to deny the inspired scriptures and the comparison that it makes here. And I save this for last because I believe it is the best comparison that can be made. And what's taking place in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 is the comparison of the human body to the body of Christ. And I believe in this case it's talking about the local body. I don't believe it's talking about it universally. And it's quite lengthy reading there. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I know that you're familiar with what's going on there. And let me read you a few verses that kind of get you familiar with it. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 14. For the body is not one member, but many. Verse 18 says about the same thing. But now hath God set the members, every one of them, in the body as it hath pleased him. And verse 20, but now they are many members, yet but one body. The human body is a self-contained unit with all the parts connected, and all the parts depended upon other parts of the body. The human body provides communication. It provides transportation both in the body and out of the body. It has a magnificent filtration system. It's just a tremendous design and creation by God. So the comparison in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 is not to be taken lightly. Many times as speakers we make comparisons and sometimes they fall apart, or sometimes they're only good for part of the picture. But when the Scriptures makes a comparison between the human body and the church body, I shouldn't think that we should take it very lightly. We should take it very seriously. And the comparisons that are made here are not made randomly. They're not made idly. They're made inspirationally. Consider the lessons that I believe exist here in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Somebody might say, well, there's not much I can do in the church. If you read 1 Corinthians chapter 12, you should have a different thinking on that subject, because what 1 Corinthians chapter 12 says is there is no part of the body, there is no member of the body whose work is insignificant or not needed. So don't belittle yourself and think because of your ability or lack of ability or because of your age, there's not something that you can do, because there is. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 tells us that. The other lesson I believe that exists here is that if you take your human body, and everybody could kind of participate in this mentally, if you were asked to take your most valuable part of your human body and just set it aside here on the table, there's a couple of things that stand out. One is that when you take that part out of the body, the body fails miserably with that one part gone. And the other part that really sticks out is, think of any human part that you want, fingernail, toenail, eyelash, you lay it there on the table, it's not very attractive. It's not very attractive when it's away from the human body. But you put it in its proper place, you put that eyebrow back in, you put that fingernail back in, well, it just fits beautifully. And it looks like it was designed there, which it was. So when we take the position as members of the body to isolate ourselves and not be part of the group, I'm just going to be blunt. We don't look very pretty. We're just kind of like that body, that body part that's out of place. There's questions to consider as we think about this subject, and there's all sorts of maybe scenarios to deal with. But a couple of questions that we would maybe ask, you know, if you were going to select a elder or a deacon or an evangelist in your congregation, what if they told you, yeah, I'd be glad to fill that office, but I don't want to be a member here? Well, you'd think, well, that's silly. You're gonna ask this guy to be in a leadership position, but he's not being a member? Well, are you going to hold an elder or a deacon or an evangelist to a higher standard than you're holding yourself? Are you in submission to elders when you in regular attendance with the body, but you haven't declared your membership? You need to do that. And people always want to ask the question, when I've discussed this with people before, and after we discuss it for a while, they want to get down to the bottom line and say, well, does my salvation depend on it? And my answer to them is, do you want to take the chance that it is? One good question, I guess, deserves another. One of the very practical questions you have to answer is, if you're not a member of the local body and you lay by in store upon the first week, where do you send your check? Is membership for everybody? That little card that I told you I threw away 30 years ago, I remember this part of it. I don't remember all the no's, but Richard said at the conclusion of that talk, he said, it's either for everybody or it's for nobody. And I thought, when I was a young man, I thought, ooh, a little harsh there, Richard. Now that I'm an old man, I think he had it right on. I take it. There are cases of people, I believe, that there's been prisoners converted while they were in prison. And probably local membership is not possible then if they stay incarcerated. But I believe that should be a temporary position. If they get out of jail, I think they should be able to join themselves to a congregation. We've had young men and women converted in Iraq and Afghanistan, and probably Japan in wars. While they were in war, it was probably impractical and not possible for them to place their membership. But when that situation that they're in is over with, that temporary non-membership, I think, should be done away with. Let me conclude with Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 16. From whom the whole body, fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself